Let's go.
What's up, Bingetown? How we feeling today? It's your boy PD, aka Producer Dave. I'm joined with Luke, Kyle, and guest appearance Alki to discuss episodes 6 and 7 of Alice in Borderland. I think this might be a little bit of a longer of an episode because we got a lot to talk about. So sit tight. Last episode, we left off with Arisu and Usagi arriving at the beach. And in these episodes, we got a little more familiar with the dynamics of the beach, as well as some of the, in my opinion, the craziest twists of the series at the end of episode 6, to be honest. So if we want to get our opening discussion out of the way, Kyle, what are your thoughts? Let's hear him.
So this recording was originally planned for a Sunday. It is now Monday night. And Saturday night, I got home at like 2:30 and was like, fuck, I have to watch these episodes. So I watched these two episodes like 2:30 on Saturday night, definitely drunk. And I was like really tempted to like watch the finale afterwards. But I was like, I can't do that because we have to like, you know, talk about these two episodes without me having the finale knowledge, you know, but like, I don't think I've ever hit next episode quicker than after episode 6. I can't imagine just watching episode 6 and that was it without watching episode 7. So I think it's good that we're doing both these episodes together.
It's my favorite twist, personally.
I was so nervous to see your reaction to these episodes because if you didn't love these episodes, I just would have felt bad for just misleading you because these two episodes are just hype as shit. We get so much good buildup into the episode 7 climactic fights for multiple characters. Episode 8 is going to be awesome. It's going to tie in into the next season, of course, and talk about some, you know, big picture stuff. But in terms of just this season, 6 and 7 feel like the total pinnacle of it. And I fucking love them all. We got so many more flashbacks, so much more descriptions of just the kind of characters all of the non-Arisu and Usagi characters are like, and I'm just so happy with it, and I love it for this being my second time seeing it.
Yeah, they were literally handing out flashbacks like they were going out of style. In episode 7, everyone got a fucking flashback. It was pretty crazy.
I feel like they did them very well, though. Each flashback being like not that long, you know, you get a good insight. Alki, any thoughts as the guest appearance? What did you think of these episodes?
Second rewatch, I mean, it was just as good as the first time. A little bit better. Noticed a little bit different things, you know what I'm saying? And they're jam-packed, 6, 7, like every single minute you gotta watch. There's no filler BS, you know, there's no like mumbo jumbo. There's just so much content to the end. And this episode 6 leaves on a cliffhanger. You can't not watch 7. I watched 7 last night and I almost watched 8. Like I almost watched 8, yeah, but I didn't.
There was so much sweat on these actors throughout these two episodes that it blew my fucking mind.
I will say that I didn't really notice it.
Are you kidding
me? I actually noticed this as my second watch. I noticed that they were like sweaty and I was like, well, this is nice. It's realistic. You're in a fight. You're going to sweat. You know what I mean?
I guess I was a bit saucy, so I wasn't paying attention to the sweat.
It was mostly Arisu like in that chair and stuff. Of course, he's going to be sweating stuff. Yeah, but then when you see Last Boss's flashback, he's disgusting.
Kuina was sweating in the fight too.
All right, so we open with a quick flashback scene of the Hatter and Agune first founding the beach. Hatter is just preaching the beach to be a place of hope for them. And then we get the flash forward to the present with him putting away all the cards he's collected in a box. And then he begins his departure for the game.
I thought it was literally so fucking funny that he owned a hat job.
Yeah, right?
It's just like... Hatter, yeah, it makes a fuck ton of sense, but there was no way I would have thought that he literally owned a hat shop. Yep. Yeah, I thought that was really funny. It's also interesting that they knew each other.
I love that part of it.
And it adds a lot more to both of their characters, but especially Agane, because he's all we have left. You know, he has the scene where like he's looking out the window. This is Agane I'm talking about. And then they have the scene where like he's looking at the fire and you see the fire in his eyes, you know. So it was an interesting episode for two episodes for Agane.
God, episode 8 is
I think it's fair to just put this statement out there because it's not really a spoiler. It's just we're gonna get some flashbacks for Agane next episode, and they're pretty fucking lit.
He had the hat store, but you understood, like it's not a spoiler that wasn't his original job. Like he said it already, so it's pretty cool too. He ended up there.
Like his father's or something like that. Something like his.
It was his father's dream.
He owned the nightclub itself, but like that was just something he was like, okay, like I have all this money, I might as well live my father's dream, you know. So next we get Usagi waking up, sleeping in Arisu. They just plan on gathering more information, but Arisu is being so closely watched by Agane and Hatter, Usagi then decides to go to the annex basement. We get a brief montage of Arisu looking for answers. I can go through the quotes of each person if we feel like that's necessary. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first guy says he heard from the guys who drove all the way to the suburbs that the further you get from the city, the more run down the streets are. And beyond that, it looks like a jungle of sorts. Next person says, I heard the game arenas are only within Tokyo. Next person says, people tried escaping on boats, but the lasers got them. And then they're kind of going in a back and forth saying that the police or not even like the United States Army came for them, which implies that at least everyone in Japan disappeared. They were saying also possibly the world, but
I love that line.
That's not confirmed
either. Not even the U.S. Army came for us. They know that we just swing just involved. Dick around. Yeah, just put our noses in fucking everything.
Those are just those little tidbits of information that are always directly to me. Yeah. I love that.
That's why you wanted me to go through them. Yeah. But the last one is aliens inserted chips in their brains and are toying with them, which is honestly still not out of the realm of possibility.
No, nothing is.
Especially because we get Lisa later on and she's doing that.
Anne.
I don't
Holy
know where
Lisa Anne. Lisa
Anne. Yeah, maybe. And she is like doing the autopsy, looking for like a GPS chip.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't think she doesn't seem like the type of person that would believe in the alien theory, but she believes that people are chipped because obviously the lasers know where you are at all times.
Yeah, she's trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And I love all those things.
I will say too that the jungle outside of Tokyo puts an interesting picture in my head of just the city of Tokyo surrounded by this like absolute wilderness, which just
would explain the panther too, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. All the animals.
How the animals get there. True. Yeah.
And Usagi also already said how they repop, the animals come back in when there's no people. You
it's
know
just like really odd timing because yesterday we watched that Solar Opposites episode where like they shoot that fucking gun into the ground and it just creates that city in the middle of the jungle.
Yeah.
And that would be I mean, this almost seems like that's what happened, is that they just like recreated Tokyo in the middle of fucking nowhere.
So those were some really cool thoughts that the people had that Arisu was interviewing. So like I said earlier, Usagi is heading to the annex basement. And as this is going on, Arisu stumbles upon some of the militants dumping these dead bodies into the dumpster, to which Silverhair, which and we finally get his name, Chishia, shows up saying this is the true nature of the beach. And they're essentially, they meet somewhere else. And he asks Arisu, how will you survive in this world that's full of despair? And Arisu goes on a pretty badass rant here, saying that he wants to find the answers to his questions, the ones behind the game. He wants to send everyone from the game back home, if that's possible. Otherwise, just Usagi. Mm-hmm. So we get a clear vision of what Arisu's goal is in this game right now.
Yeah, he's thinking with little Arisu.
Yeah.
Dude, anytime he talks about the Game Master, I get hyped.
I just picture this amazing showdown, like light versus L.
Yes,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
Like, I'm just so hyped for that moment.
It's two masterminds. Arisu, obviously, even though this guy Chishia is like a genius too, Arisu is the GOAT. Smart.
You don't like Chishia?
No, I'm saying, is Arisu the GOAT? I would say, if anything, Chishia is the GOAT right now.
Yeah. No, I'm saying, well, yeah, but like, come on. He's the antagonist. Like, he's going to be the best. He's going to beat the game.
He's got the MC armor.
Arisu is a young legend.
Yeah.
Chishia is a young goat.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But Chishia, I just want to say, Chishia just like makes fun of him for thinking he says all this noble shit.
He literally calls his goal impractical, but he finds it like amusing at the same time, and that he sees potential in him. And then he says, what if there is a way to change the status quo altogether?
The beginning of the scene was like it happening in real time. And the second half of the scene was like Arisu telling Usagi like how it happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're like kind of sharing the information that they both found. And she says that the militants are kind of on the verge, or she doesn't say that, rather she just says there's like tons of weapons that are stored in like the annex basement.
I was wondering when I first watched, and now in the second rewatch, I'm assuming that everybody's like getting killed, like they're just traitors, right? I understood that as military killing people prematurely for no reason, maybe. Like, I think that they might have, those people are dying not even because they're traitors, just because the militants are
You think they're being very loose with how they they identify traitors?
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, I can see it. Episode 7. They clearly don't give a fuck about anyone. So, we also find out, too, I thought it was interesting. I don't think, now that I'm thinking about it, the exact way that we find out, but that Chishia's plan is to steal all of the playing cards and leave.
Mm-hmm.
That was not what I thought that him and Kuina's plan was going to be.
What, do you think they were going to overthrow everything?
I had literally, I didn't have that much of a guess, if I'm honest, but I thought that that was very interesting. I didn't think that Chishia, I guess I didn't think that he was so against the Hatter. I thought his plan was more about
I don't know if he was, because the whole point of the conversation with him and Arisu is saying that he specifically does not want the militant in charge.
Okay,
so this plan, like, he was probably planning it, because I guess he was. We got hints of him and Kuina having that plan when Hatter was alive. So I guess that's a point in your favor of saying that, but I don't think he was ever actively working against the Hatter, because the Hatter kept everything calm and in control.
I think it's just every man for himself. He's just like, I want the cards. Like,
But also I think that's right in line with who I thought he was as a character. I remember watching it the first time through. Yeah.
I'm very curious of what like step two would be.
I wish we found that out, but we don't get that far. Yeah. So like Kyle says, I still have silver hair. So Chishia is planning on stealing all the cards and leaving the beach. And Patter is off to his game. And as he enters his game arena, we see kind of a shadowy figure looking at him. And then transitions to the next day. We can clearly see it's the next day because of the sun that's out. When the Hatter was going to his game, it was kind of dark out. And we see Paul's arch nemesis. We see him running down the hallways. He goes to Anne, who is kind of just fucking around in the medical building.
Kyle said he was looking for. She was looking for the GPS.
Yo, that's so funny because I have once again Lisa in my notes.
That is so funny,
Lisa. Yeah.
You needed to do something before you watched these episodes.
I was sauced up, bro. It was like 3 a.m. and I had
more than sauced up.
I had a bunch of Jameson in me.
Okay, so Paul's arch nemesis finds Anne and tells her that she needs to come with him. At the same time, Arasagi is meeting Silverhair for an executive meeting, to which Usagi is actually not allowed in because she doesn't have enough authority, I guess. Everyone loves Arisu. They enter and we see the Hatter lying dead on just a table. So that was pretty fucking wild.
With a bullet wound in his chest.
If I'm honest, I feel like it wasn't like horribly surprising.
That he died?
Yeah.
Especially since we saw the figure.
Yeah, and like the last time when he says, I'm going to go to the game, and then they give us all of the faces of all of the militants at the meeting from episode five. It was kind of like,
we
even talked about it on the last episode too, that it would, the easiest way to get rid of someone would be to kill them in a game. Cause it's just like, oh, they got killed in the game.
My first watch, I was like, death flags.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely right upsetting because he was one of the best characters. You know, he's gone. We don't get him around anymore, but
I thought they were going to start this episode with his game when I first watched
it. That would have been sick.
Yeah, like to see if what went down in his game, but we didn't. We saw him dead, and I was like, oh, shit, shit's about to go down, you know? And
so shit does go down, yeah. So it's kind of hard to process for most of the executives, but the militants proceed to make their move at this point in time. Naraki immediately goes psycho and just starts threatening everyone with his gun. So does Last Boss. We know his name is Last Boss.
Yeah, name drop Last Boss.
His reveal
was
cool, man.
When they said Last Boss, the first time I heard it, I didn't think anything of it. I didn't think that was his actual name, but it is, and it's a dope name.
It is a really good name. I mean, maybe we'll get it. I'm not sure, or maybe I'm just not remembering, but like how he gets the name.
I don't think there's any reason. I think it's just like his nickname. I'm pretty sure.
It'd be pretty sick if you just called yourself that and people were like, okay.
That's what I think it is.
Makes sense.
I think he abandoned his name, just like his old lifestyle, and was like, I'm just going to start going by this name.
That's like a crazy name to just call yourself and people go along with. You know what I mean? That's like me calling myself, I don't know, like huge dick, mixed strong guy. And everyone's like, yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Naragi's threatening everyone to make Agni the new number one, to which, of course, everyone who doesn't have guns agrees. So fuck Naragi right here at this moment, because he starts punching on the Hatter
God.
He starts beating on him, and you can see Agni is definitely getting pissed at this point. He's like,
yeah, he makes him stop.
Even though the Hatter wasn't like that big of a character, it's still fuck Naragi for doing that shit.
So a couple things I want to point out is when Naragi is walking around the circle threatening everybody. So, Kyle, I know you said initially you did like the number two guy because he was going to step up and try and be the leader because he was number two, the nerd looking executive, crumbles in a second. Not a big deal. Didn't expect much from him. But then when Naragi goes over to, I don't remember what we were calling her, the smile chick with the abs. Bangs and abs, yeah. And dude, he is crazy with the anime like tongue flick. Like he starts like being all anime, right?
Yeah. And that like just started this episode, and it gets really intense in episode seven.
He embodies an anime character as best you can. It makes a lot of people uncomfortable, I'm sure. And if you weren't into the anime culture, this is probably like a fucking heart stop.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, it's weird. It's culture shock, like, for some people, definitely, who had never seen something like that before. For me, I was like, oh, this guy's a wacko. Like, I knew he's a psycho. And I see that shit, I'm like, whoa, this guy's a bad dude. You know what I mean? But I was trying to think, what characters do that? An anime. I couldn't think of one off the rip.
Orochimaru does that too.
Orochimaru, dumb. Rewatching Naruto too.
It's just like just an anime thing. Whatever, you get over it. But
yeah,
the other thing that happens is Naragi and Chisea have the intense little talk right there, where you think Chisea is going to rebel or whatever, but he says, you know, I'm good. But that is also when you actually get his name dropped right there.
Yeah.
So you could tell they have like a mini rivalry within the executives going on as well.
Yeah, and Last Boss scares Arisu. He's like kind of spaced out somehow. And Naragi's like,
doesn't he just like sprint
doing?
Over to him real quick?
Naragi unleashed Last Boss on Arisu, pretty much. Now that I think about it, Naragi revealed two big characters' names in the same scene.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Next scene is basically Chishiya explaining that we get an overview of Agane in the process of opening the card.
The black envelope.
Yeah, the black envelope. So he's explaining that they are kept in a sealed black envelope in a safe in the Hatter's Royal Suite. It can only be opened when a new number one is assigned, and only they will see the contents of what like is in the envelope. Agane appears confused when he opens it, but he reseals it and is signed by all the other executives. Chishiya kind of notices that look on his face of confusion almost. It was something like just definitely something wasn't right.
My man is Sherlock, dude. He's so great. He notices everything. And when you get the flashes to him explaining what he was doing in that scene, you always see the side eye. Just classic. I fucking love him.
I mean, pretty much, and it's a fucking genius plan. A genius plan and like an unbelievable amount of confidence in yourself to fucking take those small body language ticks and like try to get as much information as possible out of it. And he literally did it perfectly.
And I'm not trying to steal Dave's thunder here. Not only did he get all the information, he also lied about what he saw to Arisu, and it fooled us, you know, until the very moment.
You are flashback to Chisea specifically telling Usagi and Arisu the plan with Queen. I think she's also in the room. And then when they talk about the like the passcode, I fucking love the boss ring finger being part of this whole thing. And just that was like
8,055. Like I kind of like when they were talking about it, 22. I was like, that, or 22. Yeah, 8,022. I've kind of figured that was going to be it.
No, it was the code. It was just the wrong safe. It's fucking genius.
We always were attracted to the ring. And now it has an actual meaning to it.
It was funny when we first showed it. It's him just like grabbing boss. Ass with the boss ring. And it's like, okay.
He is boss.
Yeah, no doubt. My note right here, which just says 8022 aka boss, and then just she is a legend. Like, what the fuck?
He basically explains his plan to Arisu as Arisu is going to sneak in and steal the cards while Agane's inauguration speech is going on because it's going to be too dangerous for him or Kawina to go because they're very well known executives. It would just draw a lot of attention to them. And of course, it's a setup. Naragi just comes in and just beats the fuck out of Arisu. At this point in time, I'm like, okay, fuck Chishiya. Yeah. I love this guy so much for not really doing much. And now all of that is just gone down the drain.
Did the order of my notes is Chishiya is a legend. Chishiya turns them in, ? And then there has to be more to this.
But there's not. There's really not. He was fully prepared to just let Arisu just die in that moment, so upsetting, to be honest.
And there wasn't really many takeaways from Agane's speech to the people of the beach. He just is the leader now. And then, he walks into this room and Agane personally thanks Chisea, says, thank you for helping me out, So then that's supposed to make the audience hate him even more, which I guess you can still walk away hating him from this, but not me, bro. Love that guy.
It's not full hatred. It's kind of like, you're not mad, you're disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But dude, Naragi fucks Arisu up like on the ground. Like that is, he should have been bloodier. Everything should have been like partially broken. He was just stomping on him, breaking his ribs, kicking him in the teeth. My God, that was brutal.
On my rewatch, we talked about the scene where Chishiya explained everything and said he recruited Arisagi. Right?
That's the couple name. Yeah.
He recruited them. I was a little disappointed in Arisu's. He didn't have there were no red flags in his brain that he was going to get crossed. You know, he said it so many times. Oh, I wouldn't like to be, I wouldn't like to be your enemy.
And he fell right into it.
And once the plan was like, I'm going to take the cards, where does Arisu and Usagi even fall into that plan? Like, okay, once we get it for Chishiya, he's going to take the cards. And then what, we're going to get all 52 again? And like,
I just think it was more about for Arisu. He was so anti-militant leading them because they were just out to kill him. Agane and Niragi almost killed him at the beach the first time talking to him.
Right.
So
he's just
anybody but you is better.
Yeah. And Chishiya also kind of lays on the whole time crunch aspect of it. Things are getting really bad really quickly.
Like,
something is going to happen soon.
True.
Like, we need to do something.
And Arisu and Usagi were already making their own moves. And they were like, okay, let's join forces. I'm just saying on the second rewatch, I was like, damn, I wish he saw that. You know what I'm saying?
That's why he's not a young goat yet.
Yeah. That's why he's not the goat. Yeah. Yeah.
But this was a devastating scene. He's taken to a random hotel room and is completely tied up in duct tape and blinded. And Naragi's just like whispering in his ear, I'm going to have a good time with Usagi. And that leaves just Arisu feeling completely helpless at this moment in time. Just so devastating.
He lays on the line saying that, I know your visa expires tomorrow, so you're going to sit here in total blackness.
Yeah.
Think about me raping Usagi while you have no idea when you're going to just, a laser's just going to come from the air and just kill you. So that is just the absolute epitome of mental torture.
I hated seeing that scene for the second time.
Like, I just think they did such a good job of making you hate Naragi that I just respect the fucking actor for doing this whole thing.
Oh, 100%.
He's like the best actor in the show.
Yeah, dude. He 100%. Does it so well.
Him and the Hatter, I think, are just two phenomenal actors.
Hatter was...
Agony's so great, good. Too. Ugh, there's so many great... That's why we love this fucking show, because all the actors are fucking great.
Agony's like gaze, you know? Dude,
when he's like looking in the fire.
Yeah, and because the Hatter's dead, and he even makes him more like black on the inside, kind of, you can tell. It's pretty whack. He's just so emotionless, and he's just like, just kill everyone. Sorry, I'm going ahead.
No, you're good.
But you know what I'm saying?
Agony's great, too. Dude, they're all good.
The next scene we get is Anne examining the Hatter's body. I don't really think there's much from this scene, right? It's just her clearly looking at. She pulls out a bullet.
She takes the bullet and
she figures it out for later. But that's
And then
he's been murdered.
Shishia is entering the suite right now as Queen is on watch. He determined where the cards were really hiding based off Agni's look when Naragi was kicking the shit out of Arisu, because he looks at this painting of a deer, and essentially Shishia is just like what he opened the first time. Based off his look, wasn't like a code of numbers. It was weirder, like a drawing. And he determined the drawing was a deer. The safe is behind the deer painting. She is just a fucking genius. That's all we know.
Yeah, and the show confirmed that it was a deer in the drawing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then he's talking to Queen on the thing. And she goes, wow, I really don't want to be your enemy. He goes, people always tell me that.
Which is true. They have a close call with Last Boss, but it's really not worth going into.
Whoa, yes, it is, because that fucking wink that she hits him with is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it was.
That,
like, clearly fake.
Yeah,
like...
it's so funny, though. And he just, like, looks at her and just kind of turns around. He also walks like a weirdo.
I love it.
Kind of like hunches and like sways a little bit. He just kind of walks like he's not normal. Yeah. But the wink was fucking great. I just love it.
The wink was phenomenal. I should have shouted that out. So next we get is Usagi, unfortunately, just about to be raped, and Naragi is going into his psycho mode, and the TV turns on.
Dude, the tongue thing was going crazy.
Yeah, I was surprised
they were allowed to show that.
He was going brazy with it, because like he had not done it once for the rest of it. It felt like he was like, you know what? Like, we're about to take over the beach. Let me get a little freakier. I can get a little freakier. I can turn it to 11.
The Hatter did have it on a leash. Yeah. You know? Now it's unleashed, and here it is being a fucking sicko.
But also, I was talking to a good friend of ours, Chase Standen, who actually watched this show when it came out originally on Netflix. So shout out to Chase Standen for that. How fucking awkward do you think it was shooting the scene? Someone like drops the sound boom, cut, redo it. And it's like, I got to go relick every part of your body real quick. Excuse me.
I was thinking more about the random girl that was pumping to hold her down.
I was just
going to
say that.
Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah,
holy
shit. As like a fellow woman, wouldn't you be like, dude, stop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Straight survival.
Yeah, they're savages.
She
could
be afraid too.
But let's keep going here, because that's when the power.
Yeah. Woo! So right as the TV turns on, everything else kind of starts to shut down. Shishia and Kuina are literally right about to leave the premises of the Bichu, and Shishia immediately notices lasers going up. Kuina's about to walk through the gateway, and he's like, "Hold up, lasers!" So
that moment is so cool to me. They were kind of about to break apart from the plan, because Kuina still had, she felt bad about what they did to Arisu, and he was like, "Go help them if you want." And then he's about to bounce, and then he sees those lasers, and she's about to walk right through it. But that moment, it gets so real, because all the lasers just outline the entire beach at that moment. I was freaking out the first time I watched that.
We get the twist at the beach is the next game arena, and of course it's the fucking 10 of hearts.
Yeah, it's literally genius. I was so excited when this happened.
It's the genius.
One number
couldn't have been better. It couldn't have been better. Like, everything just fell perfectly for this to be the final game.
Yeah,
just,
it's literally the perfect scenario for the 10 of hearts. It's going to be really interesting when we actually find out. They flirt with it a little bit in the next episode, but like, why?
Yeah,
this is happening, because they talked about in episode 5 around the table. Is there like something like a condition we need to trigger for the 10 of hearts to pop up? So obviously something happened.
But there's one thing I do like a lot, was that when this game initially started, instead of having the normal Siri girl voice come on, it was like a male special announcement across the whole beach, which kind of reminded me more of like a special.
It was
a male guy saying thanks for your stay at the hotel or whatever, and I kind of like it, because it's just like reminiscent of a special event in game, and that's again talking to the conditions that needed to be met to have the 10 of hearts pop up. So I like that whole thing. This seemed like this was going to be the final step of the non-face card,
right?
It
was symbolizing
like
the end of the beach.
It was almost like the game master's kind of mocking them.
Exactly.
He kind of literally led them to the beach. He put that idea almost in their heads to like go there and congregate and live to set this all up. I think it's really funny though, because once again, this is maybe not the first, no, definitely not the first, but maybe not the second, possibly the third time where when they show the fucking table of the phones just like in the lobby, and it's like, who the fuck is putting that shit there?
How did
there?
Nobody see that shit?
I know, it's I cannot wait
to
find out.
You
can
say the same thing about the witch and the body, right?
Yeah, like, well, yeah, but like have, someone fucking strange. Walked in there with a fucking table. Yeah. Who the fuck did? I need to know.
They see how many, it's the aliens, bro. It's the aliens.
Right, fuck, man. I want to know. And I'm glad that that's a question that like they know that we have. Mm-hmm. It's not one of the ones that they answer for us. They fucking dance around it like so much. Like they fucking put it in our face with that conversation with Chishia, who we've now kind of learned to trust as someone who like has a lot of information.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't get there too. So it makes me want to know even fucking more.
I want more Chishia in my life.
This, so you already said that it is the Ten of Hearts.
Yes.
But like when the voice says, everyone go to the lobby, grab your phones, the game's about to start. The hype ass techno music again is so good. And I was just fucking excited. Just when everyone gathers there and the game starts talking, it goes back to the regular Siri voice. And it does that anime thing again, where it does the flash to all the executives in there, all the high militants. Yeah. It's hitting every single character we know in the beach. And that's just such a cool moment to show that they're all, even regardless if you're an executive or not, everyone's in this together. Mm-hmm. They're all about to play the hardest game in the entire world
that they've seen so far. Yeah. Anybody's seen.
Mm-hmm.
While we're talking about it, let's just get into the game rules. As Usagi is arriving to the lobby of crowd of people, we see that there's a flood of people surrounding a dead body. And then the game starts saying, witch hunt. The evil witch who took that girl's life is among you. The witch role is not limited to women. You clear the game if you find the witch and burn them in the fire of judgment. That sentence is completed. A fire sparks outside and 2 hours is the time limit. And that's the episode. But Jesus, that is like the perfect game for this final showdown. Yeah. Just you got to find one person out of 250 people. Figure it out. And
I like the game, how they throwing in this in, like, because when the Hatter died, you're like, okay, this is the end of the beach, right? But this is the end of the
this
beach.
Is the end of the beach.
You know what I mean? Like, this is really gonna what is gonna take it down. You know, it's kind of really like poetic. The perfect storm of chaos.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's the perfect storm for the game master too, with continuing with the idea of not like mocking them at the beach. Haha, you motherfuckers tried to work together, but this is how you get the last card. Is yeah. No one can work together, you know what I mean, for the most part. Basically, I'm turning every single person against each other. So you tried teamwork, but that's not the way you fucking get it done, because only one person can live.
So we'll start with the opening of episode 7, which is everyone in the lobby still. The militants arrive, basically claiming that they're not the witch. Like, none of us could be the witch for this reason, blah, blah, blah. And when they arrive, Chishia knows better than to dip out, because shit's going to go down. People start to freak out. They're questioning the dead girl's friend. Why weren't you with her? You're always with her.
What was was there something interesting about her name?
I never wrote her name
Wasn't
down.
Wasn't it Momo?
No, Momo's the dead one.
Yeah, not her friend.
What was her name again? Rio? Something like that?
No, it's... Are you saying... I might mispronounce it, and it's going to be bad if I do, but isn't it Asahi?
Is it Asahi?
Yeah. Asu of Karasuno, bro?
I honestly didn't even piece that together.
Yeah, I heard it. I was like, yo, the goat.
Oh, all my right. God. How did I not realize
that? So it's Asahi. But the crowd of people lift her up. They're about to burn her. But then Usagi stops them, saying no one can provide an alibi. Like, why are you just going to pin it on this girl? You're just going to throw her in the fire for what? For her not to be it? There's more finger pointing. People start pointing at Anne. They're like, you're covered in blood. It's just a bunch of nonsense. There's shit's just hitting the fan. But she reveals that the Hatter was killed by someone in the beach because of the bullet. The bullet was the same bullet caliber of the ones that they carry there. So everyone's like, oh, shock and awe. And then the thudding comes of Agni stepping into the building. He's just...
You did miss the fucking insane kill by last boss. Too.
Oh, okay.
Just fucking wild. The savage. The one girl just starts accusing someone, just like everybody else was doing. And then out of nowhere, you just see the sword come through the back of her heart. And he just is sitting there crouched behind her like, let's just fucking kill them all. God, last boss.
Yeah, man. And then Naragi ends up shooting someone too.
Yeah, and then Agni arrives and says, everyone in the militant, we can prove that we're not witches for whatever fucking reason. And they're just like, if you can't prove yourself, then we're just going to kill you. The witch hunt begins. The literal witch hunt begins.
Aoki mentioned this earlier when we talked about Agni, but I written down in my notes too, just a very casual way that he says,
Agni,
we're just going to kill you all.
Yeah.
Which is oh, fuck. You know, like, it really adds to his character and it really makes him like a lot more intimidating.
Yeah, but, right.
Yeah, two little things that I'll say about this scene is that, yes, once again, I'm continuing to call her Lisa in my notes. And two was that I was proud of myself a little bit here, is that I wrote down after this scene of that the witch is definitely similar to the Taggers in the sense of like, yes, the witch obviously has their own game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And then that's right, kind of the conclusion that Arisu comes to.
Yeah. Yeah. He makes that conclusion. And Chisha makes it when he's talking with Nidagi, he's like making all these connections about why this happened and all that. So
yeah,
I just assume anytime Arisu figures something out, Chisha already did.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, I just want to point out again, this is where Nidagi goes full anime and he goes, Yahoo! And he just like starts shooting.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah,
and psycho. Like you said, the one guy is saying, why are we gonna kill everyone? Why don't we just sit and talk this out? And then Nidagi just mows him
lights
down.
Him up.
Yeah, literally lights him up. So that's great.
I'm like watching, I'm like clicking through as you as you explain stuff, and he just went, wow. Just, like,
that's so fucking funny. And my question too, now that we're talking, I guess now chaos has fucking descended upon the beach.
Everyone's
completely
running now.
Everyone fucking scatters. And they're kind of going around just killing everyone and just throwing their body on the fire to see if they were the witch.
Right.
And while, yes, this is like legitimately fucking absurd, is it more efficient than talking it out? I don't know.
I think it's probably more efficient.
Well, let's think, because they only have 20 minutes left at the end of the episode. So that was what, an hour and 40 minutes, and they got nothing done with doing this.
It's literally a giant game of werewolves.
it's like you can kill everyone. Because there is something to say about the fact that, you know, however many fucking people are at the beach, 200 odd people, and within the first fucking 5 minutes, everyone's pointing fingers and going fucking crazy before the killing starts. There's no way they would have accomplished like a discussion to figure out who the fuck the witch was. So
I think from the beginning, you know that the only people capable of figuring it out is Chisha and Arisu, maybe like some wild card.
I would agree. And I did like that, I guess, like a directing choice of using the security camera footage to kind of show everyone kind of getting fucked up around.
Yeah, that's from Chisha and Quina's perspective, right?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a good idea. It was nice that it then transitions to them being the ones watching it with us. Yeah, I liked that.
Okay, so here we have all of Bichu's going crazy. Usagi, Momo, Paul's arch nemesis, and Fodder meet up to look for Arisu. We get some really dark scenes in this episode. Like, we have the point of view of a militant who's, you know, pointing a gun at someone who's pleading for their life. He says, I'm already beyond the point of no return. It just shoots her right there.
He says, you are not humans. You are not humans. I was like, damn, that's crazy. Like, he's reasoning with himself. This is not even real. I'm in a dream. I'm just doing this to get out of this dream, and I'm going to kill you.
Right? Yeah. And Agony's just watching people, just these piles of dead bodies just getting thrown into the fire of judgment.
Naragi's fucking on the roof, just fucking sniping people with the rifle.
Kuina and Shishia end up going to this camera room. Kuina notices something on the cameras, which I'm assuming was last boss carrying the fire.
And he notices Nidagi on the rooftop too, right? I think they both see who they're going to end up fighting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
That's interesting too. I thought Kuina saw Anne.
That actually is what it is. Because she goes directly
that's where she
to
goes to.
Is it? Oh, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. But we do see last boss putting out all the gasoline, the fuel, and lighting it out. Because, I mean, him and Nidagi are they in contact? They have to be, because there's no way they have that neural connection where, because he's like, we need them all out in the fucking, out in the courtyard. And last boss is like, gotcha.
They definitely just planned it.
Didn't he say, I got it covered? Didn't he say, like,
he's like, I'll smoke them all out in the courtyard. Yeah, he says, keep sending them out. He's fucking perfectly headshotting everybody. Yeah.
They give you the one shot where the one guy dies, like, and his friend's just like standing there looking around.
Where did that come from?
Yeah. I was like, I know you're not a soldier, but like, you can't be that dumb, bro. How many games have you survived?
And all while this is going on, we're constantly getting like quick flashes back to Arisu struggling like a motherfucker in the room. So we don't have to cover that every time it happens.
Yeah. And at one point in time, they see one of the militants cowering in a bathtub, and he says he can't do this anymore. And she asks where Arisu is, and he says the main building. Fodder and Hat Guy managed to fight two guys with guns, and like, they don't have guns themselves, and they somehow, well, okay, Fodder doesn't make it out of this scene, but
before that they beat up a militant who said fourth floor.
That is right here.
Like, yeah.
So the two of them take on two of the guys with guns. They knock them out, but then the girl shows up and shoots Joe.
That's literally what I was gonna
literally
say.
Literally a Fodder name. Literally Fodder.
He was in the executive room.
Was he in the executive
room? Yeah, he was like there in awe, and then he had no role.
He's the bitch of everybody.
Where the fuck did the intern Joe come from?
He's the Joe the intern. He gets the coffee for the Hatter. That's so perfect.
But I will say that the militant chick that Fodder ends up overpowering
can get it.
She's the hottest chick in the series.
Yeah, that's who I thought you were going to say, bro.
Yeah, Psycho is the hottest chick in the series.
Hot. She's pretty hot.
Yeah, her name in real life is Ayaka Minami.
All right. Ayaka, I guess.
She's hot.
I can get behind that.
She's really hot.
I can get behind that.
These next couple of scenes here, which is pretty much going to be the episode, we're going to do it how we do some of our other podcasts where we bucket.
Oh, wait, just one thing I want to say. Kuina finds Anne in the medical building, and Anne is just looking for the witch through fingerprints. And then we can now start talking about how we want to break this up.
I also want to say that it's probably just easiest to flow through the beginning part of what Arisu gets this episode before getting broken out, because the rest of this episode is just all important and more fun to talk about. So Usagi has this information that Arisu is somewhere on the fourth floor. At the same time, Paul's nemesis also finds out from a different person that he's like roughly where he is. We flash to Arisu, who's passed out sideways in his room, and he has just a memory of Chota and Karube in the bar drinking, and it's just a cool moment where they both say, Arisu, you got to live your life to the fullest, live your life for us. Just a cool moment. It wakes him, it sobers him up. He says, just kicks on his survival instinct, right? Eventually gets the tape off his mouth and starts screaming, and Usagi hears this but cannot get into the room because it's just like, you know, locked in. So she does what I kind of forgot was her specialty thing, you know, going full rock climber mode. She just flips out the window, gets onto the climbing outside of his room as two militants are also chasing the group at this point. And then this is when Momo and Paul's arch nemesis actually turn up and save her somehow. Then Usagi gets in there, breaks him out, and then just, you know, that's before we continue with him. We'll talk about other things.
Paul's nemesis is 2 for 2 in fights against guns. It's just like, where did this come from? That's all I wanted to mention.
Yeah, I wonder what Paul thinks about that. We'll
and also,
Paul's salty.
My second comment is, the very first thing we learn about the beach, one of the first things, is that all the locks have been super glued, but this lock isn't super glued. So,
interesting.
Yeah, so that was just maybe it's like the prison room. Maybe they'll just keep this one room unlocked, but I did notice that. They did super glue all the doors.
Maybe it's a plot hole. Maybe it's a plot hole.
Yeah, well, I'll take it that way.
That like he said all of them are locked, but like I'm sure they kept some doors that could lock. You know, that would be kind of dumb to do.
It'd be dumb to super glue every single one.
Talking about Arisu's flashback, to me, it felt like that's not actually how it went.
Yes,
like there's no way that they were just friends and when they were just kicking it, hanging out.
Live for us.
Yeah, and they were like, live for us.
Yeah,
like when we were drinking like Saturday night, I wouldn't have like looked you in the eye, Luke, and been like, you know what, bro, live for me.
Hey, I guess you're right.
I think it was like a memory, like half memory, half motivation.
You know, I understood it on the second watch as like his fight or flight, his himself talking to himself, yo, get up, like do this for Chota, do this for Karube, because they're here. You're where you are right now because of their sacrifice. Yeah. Don't give it up right now.
And the second thing I will say is a lot less serious. And this is probably the alcohol talking when I was doing the notes, but fucking Usagi coming through the window just reminded me of Ralph Wiggum when he just like headbutt, just like as like a little cannonball flows through the windows in the Simpsons house. Definitely the alcohol talking. Okay.
I loved that scene because I forgot that she was such a physical person, right? And she just
climber
kicks out that window right away without even thinking, just jumps, just how she was doing in the tag episode.
They haven't really touched on that skill of hers in a couple episodes. So,
All right, perfect. So we last saw Naragi on the roof. Chishiya arrives and they have a back and forth. We already know that these two definitely don't get along. Naragi says, let's put an end to all this right here. Then we do get Naragi's backstory as well. He was just hardcore bullied as a kid, which I guess explains the psychoticness. Come on, bro. You're shooting people in the head with a full like caliber rifle. Like,
I thought they were like Yakuza fucking him up or something.
Yeah, I mean, the urine rice, whatever. And
I don't want to shame somebody who's bullied, you know.
Right.
Nobody should be bullied. It's sad. But he clearly got to the parallel world, to the game or whatever we're calling that universe. And he used that experience to become a bully. You know,
of course. That's
and I've
fuel.
Talked about it. I talked about it in the last episode. I pointed out, and we were talking about this before we started. He shot the crow and he was like going crazy. He shot the crow. It was 1 point in that game. Meanwhile, the tiger's like 500 or something. Mm-hmm. And like then he's picking on Usagi, helpless. And now he's picking off people from the roof with a sniper when all of his dudes are getting in the thick of it and like putting themselves a little more at risk. So he's just like a push. He's a pussy. You know what I mean? Like definitely. He sucks. And I thought that was a nice way of showing why he is the way he is.
When we talked about it, I might've been last episode of like, there's definitely a lot of people that think that their life in the game was a lot better than their life.
Yeah.
Obviously he takes it to the extreme in one direction. I mean, Arisu and Chota, when they first get there, like, this is nice.
Mm-hmm.
this is very nice. So
that could have been them. That could be Chota and Arisu right there. Last boss in the Naraga.
Yeah. Chota would have been last boss. Yeah, shaving his whole body.
But Hatter liked this world, like it seems like a little more, probably.
I think after a little bit. Yeah.
Power, he had a power complex thing.
Aguni too. He's got a power complex.
Absolutely. After the flashback, Shishia determines that the hotel's power was originally coming from a generator where now it actually comes from its main source, meaning the electricity of the circuits, whatever, is working for the game, meaning also that someone set up the game and that person has to be the witch. And only the militants had access to that part of the building and executives. So basically, Chishia's goal is, I'm going to kill all the executives.
Yes.
Which is so badass.
He's like, I'm going to fucking kill all of you, starting with Naragi.
Yeah, he runs at Naragi and distracts him by throwing cards up in the air. Naragi takes a wild shot, but completely misses. As Chishia is dodging, whips out this handmade flamethrower and just lights Naragi's ass up, which is such a satisfying feeling because fuck that guy.
He's like, you think I'm going to miss? He's like planning on it. And he just fucking, I loved it. I loved the jump.
I mean, you're going to use a wield that heavy ass rifle at a close range fight. You're just asking for a bad time.
Yeah. I mean, he must have had his AR with him that he's had the entire time and just.
Yeah. He just didn't have it.
Yeah. But it was funny too, after this scene, part of me, this might sound a little fucked up. Part of me is a little upset that Naragi got to fall off the building because he might have just died from the fall instead of
burning alive. Yeah.
But also, I was just laughing thinking about Chishia just having to go pick up all the cards because they went everywhere. Dude, and if one went off the roof of the building, yeah, then like screwed. Fuck.
My concern was if you flamethrow one of them, it's just gone. I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. He was so reckless with just chucking the cards up.
He trusts himself.
But it was actually a great plan because that is the most valuable asset in the entire beach. So Naragi naturally looked up at him. And
I told myself that he had a playing card deck of cards that, you know, he had.
A fake one?
Yeah, fake
one. Oh, I like that too. Yeah. I wonder what you could do with that, though. Exactly. I mean, there was all of those department stores. There was definitely some decks with playing cards. You fucked with people hard.
They had everything. They had like 50,000 bathing suits. I'm sure.
I would actually be surprised if there'd be playing cards. Like, if this is like a
true, that's actually a good point.
That's a good point. Yeah,
that's a good point. Maybe there were
if this
no
like transported. If it's like transported, then there's specifically no playing cards.
But last thoughts from you, Kyle, on this. Just see a boss just getting shit done.
Does he redeem himself from fucking over Arisu by killing Naragi or not really?
I mean, I would say, yeah. I mean, for me, I still like him.
Yeah.
I think that
he's always been an interesting character.
If you put yourself in his shoes, why the fuck does he care about who Arisu is?
He just continually gets shit done.
Yeah. And also, I just like his little gadgets.
Yeah.
He's a fucking genius. Yeah. I mean, like the taser was fucking genius. I mean, the small flamethrower came out of nowhere, but like, it makes sense with his character.
Mm-hmm. We've
already seen the taser.
Right. So I apologize there. I'm not sure if this is true. I was thinking his anime manga character, he probably is like really resourceful. He might have made more tools, more weapons in the manga that we didn't see in the show, or maybe hopefully we'll get to see more of,
I'm
like,
sure
in the
he's
next
the
season.
Coolest conceptual looking character in the manga. Yeah. He's probably so badass.
I want to read it.
He also has white hair, and if you have white hair, typically
you're badass.
Kakashi,
Hitsugaya, Gojo.
You're pretty much a savage already.
Yeah. Bokudo.
Yeah. Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey. All right. So do we want to get into Kuina now?
Yeah, man. This is my personal favorite part of the episode, is this whole Kuina last boss interactions and all the flashbacks we get with them.
Yeah. So when Anne and Kuina were together talking to each other about what Anne was doing, last boss had arrived and Kuina told Anne to go on ahead.
I was shocked by that.
Really?
I did not think she was going to step up and be like, I got this.
Dude, she's awesome.
Oh, true. Yeah. We didn't know. We've never seen her as a fighter. We talked about it too. That
I've kind of, have been waiting for a moment like this. Obviously, Chishia has some level of faith and trust in her. Mm-hmm, and so far, we've just kind of see her be a lackey kind of.
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously, she has more potential than that. So I'm glad. I'm glad. I just wasn't expecting it.
When I first watched it, I was surprised too.
Yeah. Also shown to be compassionate, which is cool because Chishia clearly doesn't have that to her extent.
Yeah.
Where she cared about Arisu. I'll take on last boss while you go figure out this game for everybody. That's a cool quality that she has that brings to the table for that pairing of her and Chishia.
Yeah, because I would say he has none.
She grounds him. She grounds him.
But I mean, how much does he actually listen to her?
Probably not.
Probably not at all, but still.
But we get a great choreographed fight right here between them. They're kind of dancing back and forth. They end up at this bar, and this is just this was a great epic battle. It was just the choreography, the slow motion. And at some point when Kuina is just knocking around last boss, he throws her into the radio and starts just the club music goes. And it's just,
It was really nice.
I loved it, man.
Also, I was thinking, like, at this point of the fight, because it's still, like, jarring to see her fighting Last Boss.
Yeah.
Not a matchup I was expecting. This bitch needs a weapon.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She's fighting this guy with bare hands.
She's blocking with tables. She's just doing the cool slow motion dive over the sword right in the early part of the club.
And, like, she wasn't running away. No. Like, she wasn't, like, really on the offensive, I would almost say. And Aoki had said this last episode that, like, that's a long fucking sword. Would not be easy to fight someone with that length of a blade handing it with just your bare hand. So
she was, I think she was running to find her. Obviously, we figure out you're about to talk about it, but she was trying to find her ideal environment, fighting environment.
When they do event, they have a couple times where they stop fighting for a second, the typical anything, not even just anime, just action, where they square up and eye each other down and talk for a second.
She says, I worked in a clothes shop.
Yeah,
that's what she said.
Yeah, we're nothing alike, and then it kind of goes.
No, but it's done in a poetic way, because the whole purpose is that you think the initial flashback is about Last Boss, right? Did you get that?
I mean, my note says Last Boss flashback.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to say. They cue it up in a specific way where the quote is saying, Queen is asking him, what was your backstory like?
Oh, and it
flashes to her backstory.
Yeah, it should have been his.
Yeah, it's done very well, in my opinion. Yeah. So we flash to a younger guy in a dojo. Is that the right fucking word for that? Yeah.
Dojo, yeah.
Am I mixing up? Yeah, whatever. So they're in a dojo. It's basically a karate studio, and they're fighting. The main guy that you see right there is fighting the master of the dojo. And it's a pretty good fight, but the master's clearly more brutal and willing to take the final shot. This kind of feels like, Karate Kid, Cobra Kai kind of thing going on right here. Because when the guy gets the upper hand, he refuses to finish the sensei and punch him in the face, which ends up getting his ass beat, right? This transitions us to what we are now slowly putting together. I don't know, Kyle, for you, if you figured out this part or the next scene, but you see the person that was just losing the fight against the sensei putting on lipstick, and then you start put together that it's actually not a backstory of Last Boss, but Kawina's past before she transitioned.
Yeah.
And to me, when I remember watching it the first time, that blew my fucking mind, because I was so ready for this to be Last Boss.
Yes.
But it was just it was so much better that it turned out to be Kawina. Yeah.
Well, a lot better. I mean, it was a little bit of deception, but if I'm honest, the way that I had taken this flashback until Aoki and I talked about it, I believe it was maybe even yesterday. It must have been yesterday.
It was yesterday.
Was that I thought it was that her dad was like trying to make her a guy, not the other way around.
So that's like typical.
Like I thought it like straight up like Robin Scherbatsky in How I Met Your Mother. Like obviously it's fucking comedy in that. He had a daughter and was like, fuck this. You know what I mean? Like, I want a son, was trying to force her into this lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But I actually like it that it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know what I mean? It's still him trying to force her into a lifestyle.
Yeah, I felt really bad. I felt really bad for her. I was like, damn, like I've noticed on the second round, she really likes martial arts. Yeah. She had the makeup, but she also had a poster of martial arts on her wall. You know, if you didn't like it, if you were being forced to do it, you wouldn't have that on your wall. You'd be trying anything over everything to like not have it in your life. She was obviously a good fighter. She would have punched her dad in the face
and won. Yeah,
and won, but she didn't deal the finishing blow, which is, you know, comes to full circle in a little like a few moments. But it's pretty cool.
So the dad ends up, I don't even know if this is the right word, but excommunicating her from the family.
Was it him exiling? I thought it was just her willingly wanting to leave.
Well, he said never come back.
I think I think about maybe she was like leaving. Like
she was leaving,
and he was like, "Don't ever come back."
Yeah, that's kind of how either way she gets booted or leaves.
So then we flash back to the club, because then I have it written down here actually. Hikari, which is who Kawina was before. As Hikari's walking out, you see his face at that moment, and it transitions to Kawina's face, and then that is supposed to be like the explicit So that was fucking awesome. But this takes us to Last Boss's flashback.
He's basically a writer, and he writes public articles on random things, I guess, but no one looks at him. So he's
like a blogger.
He's basically a blogger, but he just doesn't have a purpose in life. He's literally just away typing on his computer. A sibling or someone asks about what to do with mom. He just doesn't really respond. He's just so engraved in this, and he's asking himself, how do I find the real world? And
because Alki, didn't we
he's a neat He's a NEET. Yeah.
What does it mean again?
A NEET. It's not an education, employment, or training. It's like a term that has been, it didn't originate in Japan from like the brief research that I've done, but it's common in Japan for basically someone's like a no life. Like this guy blogs. Yeah. It showed that he had no comments, no likes, nothing. He just posts like every day.
Doesn't leave his house. Yeah. Just, you see all this crappy food and trash all over the place. He just is a slob.
And then he enters the game, and at first we see him exit his first game, and at first he's horrified, but I guess after some amount of times, he eventually learns to love the freedom of the game. This, to him, is the real world. He gets his hair cut, and he finds some guy who used to be a big tattoo artist in the real world and asks him to do something. What is the exact quote? I should have written it.
He says, like, tattoo something on me that, like, means, like, I can never live in the original world.
Yeah, right. That's what he says.
Which he definitely got one of those.
Yeah, he definitely got what he wanted. I mean, that tattoo is not going to get you far.
I also think that it was the very first game and that he like fell in love. Mm-hmm. He looked scared, it like quickly.
It was turned, like a quick. Yeah, it was a
it
quick
quickly error. Turned into like he felt alive. Like that was the first time he felt alive. He had like a release.
That
you know
is
what I'm saying?
Exactly. Well, one of you just said it. I don't even remember. But when Sasuke and Naruto are fighting Haku.
Haku.
And then. Zabuza, right? And then Zabuza's like, Kakashi, control your man. He's shaking, and it's Sasuke, and he's like, I'm not shaking with fear. I'm shaking with anticipation. Yeah. And that's what I get of Last Boss. As soon as he realizes the hype of the game, that's what his life is now. Yeah.
He's like, this is where I belong, pretty much. He has like a revelation that this is where I was. This is real life.
And then when we come back to the present, the quote that he says, for me, I have no past, because that doesn't exist anymore.
And then that's a great parallel that Kawina brings up after this realization, saying, I thought we were the same. We kind of talked about that earlier. She says, but we're not. We both hate our past, but I'm willing to face mine. You're scared of yours.
Yeah, I was gonna say, her resolve was a little bit stronger. She has a reason to be here and manages to deal the final blow.
Well, no, hold on. There's a couple things.
But she does start beating his ass a little bit.
She beats his ass. I was hype writing my notes here. Like, this is such a good exchange. And then this is when Last Boss gets that typical anime thing where they're going to do their last ditch effort, right? He shatters the glass and throws it all on the ground. And then this triggers the final flashback for Kawina when she's now Kawina. She goes in and sees her mom, who you could tell was a little bit more compassionate than the father in the first flashback.
Exactly.
And that's like a really cool moment because she feels accepted. She's happy. And now she's Kawina. And then when it goes back to the room, and she closes her eyes and gets in the stance and just says, fuck the glass, and just slides her bloody feet all over that.
That reminded me of Gohan and Goku when they're fighting Cell, and he's like, father-son Goku.
Another theme besides past in their talk is like they're talking about like the will to survive. Mm-hmm. And like what they'll do to do just that. And Kawina kind of, she realizes obviously the glass is there and she's going to have to fucking step on it. And then she says to Last Boss, will to survive, was it? And then she does like the stance and like you hear her feet go on the glass and get cut up. And it's like, okay, she's in, like she's fucking ready to go. And my fucking note is, oh baby, that fucking stance and breath,
dude. The eyes were closed the whole time in the beginning, and then that's when Last Boss lines her up with the sword. They're about to do the final thing and the music kicks back
dude,
it was so hype. She does the dodge, she fucks the sword up, and then she has that savage neck kick before going in for the final slam punch to the face, knocking him out.
She's a beast.
I dealt the final blow.
She's a black belt.
This is one of the first scenes I think of when I think of the show as a whole, like after having been finished like months later. I always think of this scene.
Yeah, she's the best.
Yeah, this bumps Kawina up a lot.
Yeah. She got a double flashback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she got a double flashback. I think Arisu's only had like two flashbacks, so she's tied with Arisu, I think, on a bunch of flashbacks.
I think there's an important piece of I might be totally wrong, but I think there's an important piece of Last Boss's flashback that we got to talk about at the end.
Okay. And I'm also interested if that is the end of him completely, because honestly, if that is, I'm not satisfied, because I want, like, his flashback felt like a tease in the sense that like we get to see him tattooed, and that's it. Where did he pick up the sword? Did he just know the blade? Right. Where did he get?
I just think it was symbolizing that he was diving into this world more than like anybody. Like he was going to live and breathe this. So he was
people
willing
who
to
are going to survive are going to be the ones to survive, and the ones who are just here for fun.
I want
to
know.
Yeah, I would love to see how he meets up with Agony. And
like
stuff.
Yeah, like Naragi like picked up a gun and like, okay, I'm obviously not like a fighter or a shooter. If I picked up a gun in this world, like, it might take me a little bit, but I could probably get all right with it to the point where I could kill some people. But like, if you gave me that fucking sword, I'd be
somewhat useless with it. So I'm just curious how he got that good.
This is actually something I remember talking with Alki about the first time we watched this months and months ago. I couldn't tell if you were supposed to think that he was sloppy with the sword when he was fighting. He was just obsessed with the idea of being like a cool, badass swordsman. So to your point, I don't know if he was really truly that good with it.
Dude, he killed that tiger in one blow.
Yeah, that's a counterpoint. That's the first time we see him. That's 100% a counterpoint.
That's our introduction to him.
I think his style and like his stance already is just self-explanatory in the fact that he's never had complete dojo training. But I think just the fact that he's been in the world for so long, he's been able to develop his own style.
Yeah.
And like that just works for him because it's so unethical. Yeah.
He was tapping the thing on the dance
floor. Yeah, he was doing that shit. Like he was dragging it. Yeah.
I do like all of it.
The drunken fist.
That's what she was doing, right?
No, but I'm just saying it's his own version almost of the drunken fist.
What is that? Isn't this a tiger?
Tiger. Kuina had the coolest thing.
But she fucking kicked his ass and it was great. And I was great because it felt good for me because I was in the beginning, she needs a weapon. And then she was like, fuck you. No, I don't.
I'm gonna beat his ass.
Yeah, I'm gonna beat his ass.
She can go to jail for using those fists.
Yeah, she has fucking observation hockey too.
Yeah, got it.
Bro, that blade came in, she had her eyes closed and she just dodged it.
True.
The most overpowered ability on observation hockey.
She was like in dodgeball when he blindfolds and dodges the ball.
Yeah.
Well, he has observation hockey too.
Yeah, he does.
He's the OG.
He's got some BDE as well.
Erroneous.
Dude.
We're done with the backstories, right? Is there any other comments we want to?
Just so satisfied right now.
Yeah. These are great episodes, man. I love these episodes.
I'm really happy that Kuina was someone that I tried to ride for when I first met her and introduced her because I thought there was more to her than the way she was acting.
When you picked her, I was hyped.
Yeah.
So I was like,
yeah.
Kyle's just going to put in his head, decide that he likes her, and then it's just the momentum's just going to keep going. And
that's great. I really like her backstory. I think that she's the most fleshed out character.
Yeah.
Honestly,
and I'm really into it.
That's actually such a fact.
Like crazy. More than Usagi and Arisu, definitely.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Which will probably not continue to be a thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there are two more seasons, and we'll see who makes it there.
There's actually two more seasons?
There will
be. No, it's at least one
at
more.
At least one.
Oh, okay. But still.
Yeah.
For right now, alrighty. W's in the chat for Kuina.
So where back we left off, just to kick it over to you, Dave, we're already good. Arisu saved, and now the conversation in the hotel room after Usagi. It's the squad. Momo, Usagi, Arisu, and Pulse Nemesis.
It's actually, Momo's dead, right?
Momo's dead. Asai is alive. Yeah, so Arisu gets the thinking. He basically is deducing that the witch is being forced to participate. He knows that it's got to be the similar situation to the taggers.
Says, give me the rules.
The others think that it's someone in the militants, but Arisu is denying that, saying that would just kind of defeat the purpose of a hearts game. It wouldn't be that simple if it was just someone in the militants. Even if it was Agane, that just doesn't really do what the hearts games are meant to do. You're supposed to feel something. Like killing a militant that is coincidentally the witch is going to do nothing for nobody. He's sitting there processing all this. Now we get a little bit of Agane, who is just, I don't even know what to describe his emotions. He is just feeling absolutely nothing at this point in time, just staring at these people just that he's killing. He is 100% responsible for at least these 50 people that he's burning alive.
He's responsible for every single death.
He's looking at it.
Probably setting in a little bit.
And I'll just quickly say, we get the flashback of him with the Hatter. How awesome was that? They were friends before coming to this world. And that kind of explains the beginning of this episode when they arrive at the beach together. And he's like, I'm going to make this a paradise.
Yeah, I even jumped the shark on that because this was so interesting to me.
Yeah.
I talked about it in the beginning of this recording, but did not see that coming.
Right.
At all. Really, I mean, it fleshes out even both of their characters. It adds such an interesting depth to Agane that I did not see coming. And especially, like, through the way we meet him, like, looking back to when we met him, me personally, like, I thought he was going to die in the tag game, 100%. And then now look where we're at, and I'm glad.
That makes the scene, especially when him and Hatter are confronting each other by the pool, that just makes that scene just so much more, what the fuck happened?
I will say, this is where we get the fire, right? And the fire in his eyes.
Yeah.
And obviously, combined with the flashback, you really get the idea that, like, it's hitting him.
What he did.
What the fuck, man? Like, where did everything pop off the rails like this? Yeah. You know what I mean? Because this can't be the only flashbacks we get. You guys also
told
this,
you. Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see what more about him. Because he's not very expressive. He doesn't have many, even like facial reactions, which even is
insane that Shishia fucking was kind of relying on reading him to fucking get all the information.
How do you read him?
Yeah, of all people, yeah.
He's killing all these people. He lost his friend. He just spent the last who knows how long amount of time hating his friend. I knew when we saw him, I was like, okay, he's going to come back because he was the beach reveal. Him and that guy that he sacrificed hinted at the beach. That's like the deep plot point of the story, and that's how it started. When we met him and when we found out that him and Hatter hate each other, I was like, okay, something happened. They have a backstory. I did not expect that they came from the real world together, though. Mm-hmm. And that added a really, you know, it brings it home. Like you're saying, what happened? You want to find out. Obviously, we gave away to you that something will happen.
Yeah.
It's good. It just adds to the integrity of the show.
It's not insane that that would happen to two people. Because even if you think about, obviously, you know, Chota and Karube come back around during the Hearts game, but
but they were ready to kill each other.
They were ready to kill each other, yeah,
exactly.
No doubt.
Karube, like, had a short fuse. He was ready to go.
Just saying it out loud of, like, the Nine of Hearts. Like, they had the Nine of Hearts and the Eight of Hearts. And
who's out here playing those games?
Who got those cards? And it would be interesting if we can find out that. And, I mean, obviously, I have no idea, but I, you know, I guess if I'm going to lob a guess out there, maybe the Eight or Nine of Hearts, something might have happened in one of those games. But also, Hearts people seems almost like only one person survived.
But so also, based on the past of what we've gotten, right? Arisu, when he shows up to the beach, him just giving them the Seven of Hearts was enough for them to almost make him an executive on the spot. Yeah. So you got to assume that the higher hearts were probably all from the executives or the high militants and stuff like that. But, you know, you're right. There's just probably good stories there with
definitely.
It was a six-pack black outfit chick. She was just slicing and dicing all the hearts.
She honestly probably is the number one contender.
One thing I wanted to say, though, commenting on what Alki said a little bit ago about the backstory, you're just finding out that Hatter and Agni had these backstories. These are the kind of things, specifically episode 7, knowing all these flashbacks and the backstories of these characters. Now when you rewatch the show, dude, it's so much better. When you see Agony in episode 2 from our perspective, we're already knowing this is fucking Hatter's boy. He's a big dog. He's the leader of the beach. This show has so much rewatch value because they don't feed you the backstories until the end of the season, right? Yeah. So all of that stuff, and just you're going to have such an appreciation when you go back and watch this again, whenever that is, if you're
preferencing to. They hit that thing. Just like when we watched last episode, we talked about when Chishia saw Agony in the tag game.
Yeah,
he was like waving at him like an idiot. And we're like, what is he doing? And then it made a lot of sense. And that was answered. That was fulfilled within the same episode, right?
Yeah. And honestly, that we're talking about this and I'm thinking about it, it makes me even sadder that, not Chota, because Chota was kind of a bum, but that Karube died, because I think it would have been really interesting if there could have been a parallel between Arisu and Karube and their relationship, and Agony and Hatter's relationship.
I like that.
The story is moving very quickly. Mm-hmm. So like that would have extended things because we would have had to develop Karube at the beach and, you know, and then and having to have something of a wedge between the two of them. But it kind of makes me want that to have happened.
To piggyback on that, I thought when we saw Seven of Hearts and it was with that chick, what was her name?
Shibuki.
Shibuki, yeah. I thought that they were going to figure it out and then they were going to split up. Karube and Chota will go away and then Arisu will do his own thing and then they're going to come back and maybe they'll be each other's final boss.
That would have been sick.
You know what I'm saying? That's what I thought was going to happen. Shit, they're really about to fucking die right now.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn,
fuck.
I believe that more than that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But more than them dying.
But
I'm glad that happened.
Yeah, that's why that makes that twist a lot better.
Yeah. And that point that I just made about the potential parallel feeds into the little bit of like the criticism I had about them all dying at the same time in episode 3, of a lot of it of like waste potential. I feel like there was a lot of plot and story and emotional value that was just slammed into our face at once instead of we could have had a little bit more. But I mean, obviously the story is just very fast paced and it's not going to be like an insanely long One Piece or a Naruto level manga.
So maybe the manga had it more drawn out.
It definitely
it does. It does. You
know?
It does.
But hold on, Kyle. So also I was thinking about the episode 3 thing too, because I know I like queued it up to you saying that might have not hit as hard in the moment, but it made room for all these other characters. Now, do you stand by that, right? Like all these fleshed out characters are so, I am so happy we're spending time with Kuina and Last Boss over Chota. That's why you got to view it in the two halves, where it's the first four are all prequel setup for this expansive roster of characters that are every single one of them. You can just hear me gushing over them every time I talk about someone.
I mean, obviously we're talking about them because we podcast about it. I mean, like Chota and Karube are complete afterthoughts in the series. And
yeah,
I feel like
right now, yeah,
one of them could have had more of an impact. I mean, now we have, you know, we had the Arisu flashback where they're talking in the bar and stuff, but I don't know.
I don't know, man. I still say Kyle Rube is my boy. After my first watch, I was like, he's still going down. I loved him. Yeah. I thought he was
Kyle Rube is still my boy.
Let's finish this off because we still last scene here, and then we can keep talking.
We go back to Arisu. He's still thinking. He determines that he should start thinking like the game master and not the witch, and this allows him to keep the options open of that someone made this game after calculating this timing. This game was so perfectly set up. Hatter just died, then the game starts. This was all set up in that amount, in that window essentially of him dying in this moment. So he determines that, and then we see Anne also at the same time determine the fingerprints, which to me is just so fucking stupid. She sees the fingerprints, she's like, oh, I know exactly whose fingerprints those are, let me just run and tell everyone.
Was wild, because it felt like the only way you would have that level of revelation is if it was a fucking alien fingerprint like you'd never seen
actually
before.
It's not as simple as you're saying.
Regardless, Anne determines the fingerprints, she leaves the room, and some militants knock her out. And by this point in time, there's 20 minutes remaining. We see Chishia still just acting calm for whatever fucking reason. There's 20 minutes left, and he is just
always
in the lobby. Does he know what's going? The answer?
Well, he was calm in the tag game too, and it's not like he was a guaranteed to win. They weren't going to win if it wasn't for Arisu. So,
all right, but then here we get Arisu's Jimmy Neutron moment. Think, brain blast. Arisu figures it out, but of course, it's the fucking end of the episode. Yes. We don't get to find out who it
is. I think I knew who the witch is. He stands up. Everyone looks at him like, come on, do it for us, daddy. Yeah. All
right. This is me drunk as a skunk at 4:30. Like, let's go. And then no. And I was like, fuck.
All right, then.
Then
so
you
that's,
looked up Lisa Ann on Google.
So who do you think it is? You said you have two options. I'm interested to hear who you think the witch is.
I think that.
Are you guessing witch or game master?
Witch.
Okay.
I didn't consider Game Master to be like someone that we would have known, but that's an interesting concept as well. I would say that based purely off of the evidence given to us in the episode, especially at the end with the thing that Arisu talks about with the timing, it really makes the easy guess to be Chishia because they come to the same conclusion about the timing, but the person who initially mentions timing was in episode 6, which was Chishia, who says that things are happening at the beach, so we need to get our plan in motion. And he has already shown himself to use people in very disposable ways. So, and they're very heavy-handed with the I wouldn't want to be your enemy quote, because both Arisu and Kuina use it. And he's like, yeah, I get that a lot. If you're the game master and you're actually observing, he or she, the game master, can observe and is watching what's happening, you would pick Chishia to be the witch because that's the person that's pretty much, if you want the most people to die, then he's the one you want to be the witch because he's the least likely to get fucking caught.
True.
But I don't want him to be the witch.
I love hearing your thought process through this. I legitimately had the power to just, okay, next episode, let's find out who it is. You know,
I never really thought
about it that much. At the time, I was like, okay, Akane is, to me, the glaring option, I guess. Even Arisu was saying, like, that doesn't feel right.
It's also interesting, too, to say how people were saying that if you were the witch, what would you do? They come to the conclusion that you would either hide or you would really dive into the killings, because look at this person trying really hard to find the witch. And while Chishi doesn't really fall into that category of trying really hard to get involved with the killings, he is obviously killing
executives.
People. He's killing executives, which are the people that they wield the most clout. You could take that both ways in the sense that he's picking off people who he thinks are very likely to be the witch, or he's picking off people who are very likely to challenge him
and think he's the
witch. And make him lose as the witch. I'm going to say that this is going to be a classic. You're on taking a test and you have the answer B and then you change it to A, but the answer is B. I'm going to guess it's number two because we haven't seen his bitch ass at all.
Oh, number two. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the guy with the glasses. We haven't seen him at all since he kind of got little boyed by Naragi and he fits the exact character or exact at least the mold of the person that Chishia is looking for. So I'm going to hop in the boat behind him. He's going to find the answer because I don't want to think he's the witch. Obviously, number two knows about all of the power structures within. He obviously knows pretty much everything there is to know about the beach and the way things work there. He has, you know, his finger to the pulse of what's going on. So he obviously knows there was something going to happen. Also, the Hatter is very eccentric, but he seems pretty careful in his own way. And I think that it would be very easy for number two to be the person that would kill him. Because like he would not see that coming. So I think number two is someone that could easily have set all of these events into motion, which would then benefit him as the witch.
I am loving this more than you know right now. Like I just love hearing this.
But I just think it's very suspicious.
This is like so logical. Like, yeah. This is so well thought out. Like I never had anything like this.
I think it's very suspicious how we haven't seen him and they're kind of giving us the witch is either someone who's very involved with the killings or someone that, you know, is just completely hidden that no one can find them. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, we haven't seen that motherfucker.
Are you saying that you think that the person who the witch is also the same person that killed the Hatter? Is what you're saying?
I mean, if it's number two, then yes.
Okay.
But if, yes. But if it's Shishia,
are you saying it's not?
I don't think that Shishia killed the Hatter.
Okay.
I just think that he kind of saw that coming. See, as I'm saying that, it also makes it insinuate that, like, the witch is someone who initiated the Ten of Hearts game. Yeah. So if I'm putting myself in Shishia's shoes, that's kind of the way that I get to number two.
Okay.
Because he is an executive. They give us that look of him that he's kind of like the logistical guy. He even has the comment, I believe it's in episode five, when they're around the table, if we just run whatever, like a probability function, we'll figure out how to get to the Ten of Hearts, blah, 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 blah. So he seems obviously as a calculator. And I think that him and Shishia kind of come off as the two people that would be great candidates to be the witch. So it's kind of a combination of thinking as the game master, who, because it seems like the game master can pick who the witch is, who would be the best candidate to be the witch, because it's not to some fucking Joe Schmo. It's definitely not Joe, because Joe's dead.
Well, could have been. They never burned.
Well, yeah, they didn't burn a lot of bodies, yeah, which exactly. is an interesting thing, because when I was talking about, is it an efficient strategy? And it's not, because they can't possibly get all the bodies onto the fire. And then also, it's combining, like, thinking like the game master to pick a witch, and also definitely a lot of emotional, don't want it to be Shishia, so I'm just going to act like I'm Shishia and follow the information that he's given me mm-hmm. and try to come to the conclusion. So taking those two things together, that leads me to say number two.
I don't want us to comment on it much because
I'm literally staying quiet. I'm so hard.
You were amazing right there. That was really good Rook stuff.
Kyle just dominated that right there. I was loving that.
Bodied.
Yeah.
It's gonna be so fun to reflect on your guesses at the end of the next episode.
If I had to give it like a confidence level, I'd maybe throw like a 7 on it for number two.
Number two.
I'll probably throw like a 4 on it because that's probably a lot of my heart talking. And it's interesting, but like I don't really think that it's her.
Did we mention that she got knocked out? We did, right?
Yes.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
At first, when I watched the scene, she finds the knife, and then could she just have been acting like she's trying to figure out the knife, but she just wants to take away the evidence of that murder, which, you know, is evidence that could lead you to the witch. I don't know. I didn't mention this just because now we're talking about Anne. I like the way that she's kind of cooked up that strategy. That was very interesting.
I like Anne a lot.
Well, yeah. we didn't talk about she's an ex-forensic cop. Oh, yeah.
But so I mean, she just kind of MacGyvered it.
Right. She knows body. Yeah. She knows about the human anatomy. She obviously has good deductive reasoning. She uses her context clues very well. I like that detail because it made sense. Because we don't know what Shishia does. What was his past? You know what I mean? Is he another gamer? Like, I doubt it.
And got the biggest bump of him as anybody compared to my first watch to my second watch. I just went in loving her in the beginning, and I thought she was great in the first game when she's testing out Isu. I loved it way more than I did.
Yeah,
the first
me too.
Time.
I didn't really appreciate it the first mm-hmm. watch.
Great legs too.
Great legs.
All right. So I got a couple things here for us before we sign out. So first, I want to talk about the Alice in Wonderland references. These are actually my favorite ones to bring up to people who you don't really catch them when you're watching them. But this one's a little bit loose and this one's a little bit more up for debate compared to the next two I'm going to give. But some people are trying to say that Asahi and Momo are supposed to just be, because they're always seen together, there's the two people. They're supposed to be like the Tweedledee, Tweedledum doubles in Alice in Wonderland. But
I don't know how you'd say they're not.
Yeah, I mean, it's just fine. There's nothing more to it than that, right?
Yeah.
So the next two are fucking great. And this is why I personally didn't want to say Whitehair's name the entire time going through the first couple episodes, because Chisea is literally Cheshire. Like, he's the Cheshire cat.
Oh,
who wow. is, he's notorious for being the neutral, just has his own agenda in all of Alice in Wonderland, right? Got he's always cool. mysterious in
I
the
really,
background.
I really like that.
Dude, he's great.
I got hype as fuck when I found that out.
Yeah, that's
and it just works, and you're going to love the next one too. But so Chisea, it pretty much works perfectly. Like, that is pretty much how you pronounce it in Japanese anyway, so it's direct.
He
that
looks
one's obvious.
Like a cat too, which is the crazy thing.
Dude,
like,
but wait,
his character,
there's more.
Yeah.
It's just so great that he is that, because, you know, he helps out. Just as the Cheshire Cat does, helps out Alice sometimes and warns him, but then other times fucks him over,
like they did
in this episode, like that.
And it's also interesting, the level when we're talking about like compassion and empathy, he doesn't have it because he is a true neutral.
Yeah, exactly. And then the next one is his partner Kawina, who is a direct representation of the caterpillar, the one that is always
the hookah smoker.
The hookah smoker. That's
why she has a thing.
Oh,
that's
what the pen is. So a couple things. There's the pen thing, which is always the smoking of the caterpillar. always talking with Cheshire Cat, which is duh. And then she has the colorful dreads, which is a direct thing to the caterpillar too. And then the obvious thing in the you know, Kuina being a transgender person, it's just the transformation thing.
Oh, dude, yeah, she came out of a shell or a cocoon like a butterfly.
It's so great. There's subtle Alice in Wonderland stuff. I get hype when I fucking tell
that's
people.
That's really
that stuff.
Awesome.
Maybe this is a reach too, but you know how the caterpillars always like, "Who are you?" Right in the cartoon one, and she kind of asks Last Boss, who are you, bro? Yeah. You know what I mean?
She might have been asking herself that a little bit.
Yeah, that could have been like who are you? Oh, yeah, that's even more of a parallel, I think.
She found herself. Yeah, she's a fucking badass.
So I don't know if there's going to be any other fun ones, like even for next episode. I pretty much have just been waiting to tell you about Saya and Kuina because it's right in your face. That's why I was so adamant to saying, remember when she's smoking her thing, because I wanted to bring it up at this point. And then Chisea is just, that's just the coolest thing ever. I do think it's a little weird that Agony doesn't really represent someone, but I guess the Mad Hatter didn't really have that one other person to really make the parallel work there.
There was a, didn't in the cartoon, didn't the Mad Hatter have like a minion guy?
He had the rabbit who's a Soggy. I'm late, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's who was Soggy first.
It's the Queen of Hearts. She's a character, right?
That's what I actually was just about to say is I don't think we've seen the Queen of Hearts, but I think the Queen of Hearts
is bangs and abs.
I mean, why?
I mean, she's all about the Hearts games.
She seems
to be the queen of Hearts games.
I mean, that's a cool thought. I was going to say that it's not a confirmation of anything, but I did briefly see on Reddit after I watched the first season that there is going to be someone that's a representation of the Queen of Hearts, but it also didn't say that it isn't someone we've already seen. It's just a reveal later. So you could be right. Yeah. I'm just saying that's going to be a character.
She's probably like third on the list for who the witch is. She might even fucking be the game master.
Who knows?
That would be interesting because she's like trying to get them to play the Hearts games. Like, just fucking kill everyone. You'll get the card. Just kill them all.
Fucking wild.
Yeah. Oh, and so this is something that I wanted to say, that I kind of hooked up this somewhat crackpot theory of what the overall goal
meaning behind the game is and stuff.
Yeah, everything is. And obviously we get down to the point where it's like one person wins. And that's kind of like a normal thing for any type of game or, you know, there's only going to be like one
battle
person.
Royale.
Yeah. But it just, you know what it really reminds me of? And obviously I have no idea when all these things come out and, you know, things influence other things and, you know, things have been done a million times over. So nothing's truly original at this point. God of High School. How God of High School is a tournament pitting all of these fighters where the underlying, it looks just like a martial arts tournament, but the underlying goal is that there's these two, not religious, but like opposing forces in the world that are trying to identify something that's known as the key. Mm-hmm. And the key is something that they're trying to utilize their power because the key is kind of a vessel for like an otherworldly power, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, Chota's mom's cult, I really hope it means something. I hope it's not just like something to fucking add to Chota's terrible character. because it seemed like they were hinting at it. Like, that's the reason why this has happened, you know? And I like Paul when he was thinking about the whole idea of what people were doing when they disappeared. We've mentioned the word, you know, the concept of people being neats multiple times, mm-hmm. of like slapping all these people into an arena with the knowledge that the person that eventually leaves the world, you know, the person that rises to the top, they're looking for someone. For some reason, it just reminds me of the God of High School tournament and like the search for the key. Obviously, that turns out different in God of High School because there's multiple keys. I just wanted to put that out there and solidify it in audio waves.
So you're basically getting at the fact that Arisu could be the typical winner.
He's
someone
the guy
like the cult is looking for.
Yeah.
Solo leveling too.
Same thing. Yeah. It just has a vessel. So I'm just great.
And
curious
Spy
to
Kids.
See.
You're the key, right?
You're the guy.
The guy who dies right away, right? Doesn't the guy get like crushed with lava?
Yeah,
or
of course
shit?
It was.
No, but
Juno
it's actually Junie. Yeah, the whole time.
But because we're gonna get to a part where they solve the game. At least I'm assuming, unless they subvert the shit out of our expectations and the game doesn't mean anything. But I feel like the person who gets to collect the deck means something. I feel like there's someone. Either the game master,
Hunter X Hunter, Green Island. Sorry, these parallels.
I know. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like everything includes everything else. Nothing's truly original. I feel like the person that is going to end up winning, quote unquote, the reason the game is there is because the cult, who the game master is a part of, I will say, how about that, are trying to identify someone who they think is going to come along. They want to use that person in a certain way, further the destruction of something, or like to achieve their own twisted.
You
goals.
Think that people in the real world know about this thing?
I think there are people in the real world, yes, that know about this, I will say.
I never thought of that.
So obviously there's going to be some fucking crazy shit that happens in next episode, but there's also so much that are left up for debate that I think we can actually comment on this because we don't fucking know yet.
That makes you feel good just off the bat. I'm not going to say that and then turn around in the next podcast episode and be like, so everything I said was bullshit.
Yeah. I'm envious of, like Dave said, your ability to sit on the episode for a little bit of time. Because I crush it in like 8 hours. It's eight episodes of crushing 8 hours watch time. You know, I didn't get to theorize.
Being a rookie is really fun.
You know, it's awesome. It was so thought out deep. You know, you could write a page about this shit, man.
One more question for you before we move to the last Banco Mary segment. I got one for that.
I like it.
Anything specifically from this season that you think there's a realistic chance that we're going to get answers to next episode, like that we already haven't talked about? Is there anything that you like, any little plot points? Because I know there's some things that are going to happen next episode and you're going to be like, oh yeah, because we haven't talked about it in a little bit. But
yeah, I would say the first thing that comes to mind is face cards.
Okay,
that's the first thing that comes to mind. That does seem a little bit like season two shit, but that's literally the only thing I can think of right now. I use pretty much all of the processing power in my brain to talk about who I think the witch is and that key shit. So that's all I got right
that's
now.
Fine, that's fine.
I'm running on fumes over here.
No, you crushed the end of that. That was good.
The last boss's flashback. And Kyle's key talk actually triggers something else that kind of piggybacks on it, but it's not exactly where I'm going with it. But we see his whole flashback, how he turned into the psychopath that he is. When we saw the blog, the comments and the posts had dates on them. And they were dated May 2021. If we look back, there might be other Easter eggs. I'm using that word. It's not, maybe not an Easter egg at all. But like, if we go to first episode, if we can see, and it shows, I looked back, it shows Adidas's phone. It has what I'm assuming is dates on it, but it's in Japanese. So I didn't know what it said. It could add to our theory that we were talking about like, what's the concept of time?
Yeah.
And this thing, because then we got a little bit about what's going on outside of Tokyo, that the suburbs are really run down and then there's jungles outside of them. That happens only when a lot of time has passed and there's been no humans. Who knows where it is? But I thought like it was an interesting detail to pick up that it said 2021.
No, I like that. That's a good catch.
You know, that's like really interesting. And so, then, I
mean, obviously, if the show has been released, it's May right now. And the
exactly.
Been
it's been released.
Yeah. The whole fact that it was, you know, also blogging on the internet in the year 2021. And then you contrast that with the way that we find out the news and the articles about Usagi's dad being all print paper
is an
interesting contrast.
Yeah, but you know, I was actually thinking about that at home. Okay, she's never been in like modern times. Like, she just knows what a touchscreen cell phone is, though. When she goes to the game,
yeah, but she's been,
but she's been in the world.
Even if you didn't know a touchscreen phone and you played one game, you'd at that point, you'd figure it out.
Yeah, also, I feel like you don't do much with the phone; it just fucking does it.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think: is there a chance that this, what did he call it? Other country, foreign country, is what the Hatter was calling it. Like, this is a foreign country, is just time independent, meaning it's just stuck in a random time and people from the real world are just getting plucked at all points and dropped in here, which could explain the huge gaps in difference from you know, the real
world.
That was
my mental conclusion after our conclusion last time. And I wanted to say, now while Kyle's talking about the flashbacks of the cult, Chota's mom is involved in this stuff. It's shady business. In Aguni and the Hatter's brief flashback, Aguni mentioned Yakuza. And he dropped a name and he said this guy like got caught or something.
We forgot to mention that. I think that's going to be important.
That's important.
I think that might be important.
It might be important. And then they got brought into the game world. Also, in Last Boss's flashback, his sister or something was like, what do you want to do about mom? And he just ignored that. And then we didn't get anything about that. Mm-hmm. More than a couple of flashbacks of a lot of question marks of like what happened. Like, they answered most questions except for like one, like that one about the Yakuza. What's up with his mom? What's up with Chota's mom?
Last Boss's flashback, I feel like, raised more questions for me than it answered, which made me feel a little unsatisfied about it, which is why I hope that he's not like dead.
All right, are we ready for Banco Mary?
Because that was always ready for Banco Mary. I'm always.
Yeah. All right, so I'm gonna marry Psycho. I'm gonna bang Psycho.
That was a great fucking discussion. I'm so excited for Kyle to see the finale because now I just have the highest confidence that he's just gonna walk away loving it.
Yeah.
But with that being said, let's focus on the important stuff here. We're gonna Banco Mary, and this version, I'm just gonna have it again as the same theme as we did last.
Repercussions are real.
Like, you're in this world, and you have to Banco Mary. these people, but we're also assuming that that's in a time where the beach is neutral. Like, you know, you're not freaking out. This is like a year ago.
Party
years.
Beach.
Like, this is normal beach life. You have to bank, kill, marry one of these three. All right, you ready? So the first person is Niragi. Second one is Last Boss.
And third is Agane.
And third one is Paul's nemesis. Paul's nemesis. So you got a bank, kill, marry between these three.
Oh my God.
I'll what just, do you do?
I'll
go.
Start because I know I'm going to marry Paul's nemesis. Like, that's just like not even a fucking question. I just think Last Boss would be like a dead fish in bed. So I'm just going to kill him and just bang Niragi. Just show him what's up. Show him who the real man is.
Oh my God.
So that's my answer. I feel like I can't really go anywhere else with that. I don't know.
And it's so funny that I don't ask this question after you literally just said it, but we're thinking consequences, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, like legit consequences. True. So my answer is going to be that I am going to marry Niragi.
Have fun.
I'll just hit my complete heel turn and say, fuck it, I'm in. Like, let's go lick and kill people. And then I'm going to bang Paul's nemesis. Because there's no negative repercussions of that. He has no clout. He can't really come at me in any way.
Yeah, Niragi's
going to defend me. And then I'm going to kill Last Boss because I don't want to marry him. And it was between him and Niragi to marry. And then I had to kill the other one because I can't bang someone that's that dangerous and then just go marry someone else. You know?
Kill someone that's that dangerous, though?
Well, yeah, I have to. It's bang, go marry. So. I'll get Kalina to fucking take him out for me.
True. All right. So I'm up. That was your wife last time, right?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So you're polygamous.
Fuck yeah.
All right. So I'm going to kill Paul's nemesis.
Wow. Oh my guy. God. How are you not going to marry this guy?
For the same reason that Kyle just said, because I actually switched as you were talking.
Technically, him versus Niragi is a great matchup because he's undefeated against guns. So he would beat Niragi.
Yeah, I might have trouble killing him, but I'm going to kill this motherfucker. He doesn't have any. No one cares about him.
Just put him in a room with some water.
Yeah.
The water is rising.
Yeah, with some electrical circuits, he'll kill himself eventually.
I'm going to marry Last Boss because I know that dude has no desire for anything. Like, once we're married, it'll just be on paper. He's not going to try and touch me or anything. We're good there. And if someone messes with me, that's my husband. So come here and slice some motherfuckers up. That's where I'm thinking. And then I'm banging Niragi just because the same thing as, I forget which one of you two just said. You just said, give him a taste of some medicine.
Yeah, yeah. Let him know he's the real man. Yeah, I'll fuck his day up.
Yeah. Be a hate fuck.
All right, Alky.
I'm
send
bad
us
at
home.
These. These are hard for me to choose. I'm really bad at
being favorites. We love your
Alky
input,
spends
though.
The whole last podcast talking up Usagi, kills her right away.
Yeah. Dude, you asked me what the
and then he regretted it off podcast after. He's like, I wish I didn't do that.
I wish you asked me again. Because this is hard for me. I would kill Niragi because I really dislike him.
Mm-hmm.
I would bang... Water rising. Because he's just like, I don't know, he just needs to be used. And then yes.
Wow, I think you say he's just like a nice guy, like we would have a good time.
Oh, he's just like a tool.
Oh my God.
Form of masturbation. So and then
you're gonna use his ass to masturbate.
You're gonna use his boy pussy, his little boy.
It's just like this right, a little bit too R-rated, I think.
No, we're good.
All right, wait, who's your last name?
And then I'm marrying my boy, Last Boss.
Fuck yeah, me and you, bro. Let's get it.
You guys are fucking wild.
Last Boss, listen, man, he's loyal.
Yeah, he's loyal. Yeah, he is loyal. Oh,
he's got my back, I think. Yep. Niragi's a little bit of a loose cannon. What the hell is Water Rising going to do?
True that.
He's going to bitch and moan. We're the trash guys here. What are we going to do? Take out the motherfucking trash, man. It's trash day. You had all day to take out the fucking trash.
I love how you're thinking about all these domestic
issues. Like, who's going to cook? Last Boss is going to hunt. Yeah. I know we're never going to be shortage of meat. You know, we're always going to have some in the fridge.
That's true.
You know what I mean? True. Niragi's got no life skills. He got bullied. He let his motherfucker hit a baseball into his face.
Bro, he can hunt.
Good shit, boys. We're getting out of hand here in this bank kill marriage. Right. Dave, yeah. Take us home.
I will say before Dave takes us home that we have mentioned a lot of...
My name's PD, by the way.
Before PD takes us home. we've mentioned a lot of, you know, anime and manga that we kind of, you know, see parallels in. A lot of, you know, scenes, characters, things of the sort that we... are trying to bring in because that's what we know and we're kind of relating it to. So there's been obviously a big event that happened in the anime and manga community recently.
Yeah.
It would be remiss. We would be remiss. It would be bad of us not to mention this, at least in this podcast, since this is the first recording that we've had since it's happened. So just a quick shout out to a legend of the genre, of the medium. I might butcher his name and I will apologize for it immediately. But what is it? Kentaro Miura? The mangaka of Berserk. Unfortunately passed away recently.
It was a great manga, man. I loved it. It was literally, I tell everyone, it's the Game of Thrones of manga. Like, just so well written, just the ability to kill off characters without any remorse, just well drawn. Just I'm upset to see what's going to happen. I'm hoping that he had some chapters stored away in the bank, and that it was so close to being over. Like, I don't think he managed to finish it. We knew he was sick, but absolutely just total travesty.
A true seinen, right? Isn't that what the genre is? Yeah. When it's like a mature
S-E-I-N-E-N.
I, one of those mangas I picked up, crushed it really fast. It was just a gripping story. Page Turner, the main character.
What's his name? Guts?
Guts.
Yeah.
And he just has a lot of redeeming qualities. He has like multiple character arcs. The characters around him are so deep in it. It's a very deep story that you don't get that with not every single anime or manga has those qualities. And he did a great job of doing it. And it's really sad that he's gone.
It's been under the radar for a while. I mean, you get like, it's because it's in that weird bridge where it's like, it's an older one, but you had Naruto, One Piece coming out. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, as soon as like Berserk was picking up steam, then you get into that new generation.
I don't think
like
it was ever a weekly one either.
That he's been sick for so long, because he would release chapters like once a month, once every 3 months. So it was kind of like a little spotty, but
it's been in the top conversations though, for like, it's for on me, every still, top 10 list
it's in one
for
of
the
mine,
past
yeah.
20 years.
I would say it's up there for me. I love it. Zod's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. And especially because we're saying that as we're watching Alice in Borderland, we're kind of relating it to a lot of other things that we've seen, you know, within the genre very loosely, I guess you could say. But kind of Berserk is almost like the king of that. I mean, it just, like, obviously, you know, his passing is very unfortunate, but just kind of all of the messages and the things that people have written about him and the series itself on Twitter and everything, and reading all of it, it's just incredible, like all of the connections that people make. And you can really see how he influenced a lot of, you know, the series and the shows that we love ourselves. It's horribly sad that he died, but it is just kind of, that angle is interesting, that his masterpiece, his art that he created, is known as this legendary piece of, you know, this genre. And it has influenced so many other things. And then now, as we're talking, we're covering Alice in Borderland. And every episode we talk about how it reminds us of other things. And kind of Berserk is almost the king of that.
He was a very well-respected creator.
Yeah.
That's going to be it for today, guys. This was a fucking blast talking these two episodes. Like, this was the most fun I've had in a very long time. Fucking shop on the podcast. Next episode will be the series finale. Kyle and our townies, strap the fuck in. It's going to be a wild ride. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Bingetown TV. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Check out our continued coverage of Shadow and Bone. And definitely check out our merchandise. You can find it on our website, www.bingetowntv.com. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
Love you guys.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.